Blog Talk Radio.
There was a time I was so afraid, so scared to do what I wanted. In looking back, I can see all the mistakes that I made, and I wish that I could talk to me and tell me I can change. Don't be afraid, just walk with your head up high. Don't be afraid, just take it one step at a time. Don't give up on your dreams, no matter how small they seem. Don't be afraid.
Hi, welcome to Blog Talk Radio, Safe Recovery. This is Monica Richardson, and I am your host. It has been 3 months since I have done a show. It's been a busy time. Needed to take a little break, get a little downtime from the shows. I've done, I think, some 270 shows or something like that. Today we are going to do a show with a new friend of mine calling in from Michigan. Her name is Angela. And we're going to talk about how we can stop court ordering people to Alcoholics Anonymous. This is a sort of a tri-webbed sort of thing, how people are coming to AA. One is, if you get a DOI or a DWI, you're going to get sent to AA either by the judge or by that class that you're going to be sent to. The second way is if you're a violent offender or a sex offender, they're going to use it, the lawyers use it as a way to get you out of jail. And it's worked many times, as we've seen with many fatal killings, like the Carla Brada case and even the Tracy White case. There's many, many that I've listed on my Leaving AA blog. I want to plug my film. It's the 13th Step, the film. It's out on Amazon, a 52-minute version. Vimeo version is a little bit longer. I like that version better. But they're pretty affordable, $1.99 to rent it on Vimeo. And it's free if you have Amazon Prime, and it's pretty cheap there too. Okay, so we want to start some activism going on here, and this is the reason why I've asked Angela to come on so quickly. I've only known her for a few weeks in the groups. I want to do a little plug for the groups for support. If you've left AA or think about leaving AA, and there's, of course, the Leaving AA blog, but there's a Facebook group called Leaving AA. One is a community, one is a group. Groups are better in a way because you can start your own conversation in a group or in a community. It's kind of in control of the admin. Now, if you've already left and you want to help deprogram, we have a thing called deprogramming from AA or any 12-step group. I have a Make a Safer group. If you're still in it and you want pamphlets and you want to help make it safer, that's a place that would be good for you. And then there's, if you've been forced there as a pilot, nurse, or a doctor, we say no to AA for DUI or any coercion for professionals. I don't know, I think I have too many groups, but anyway. And with all that, I am going to bring on Angela right now. Hi, Angela.
Hi, Monica.
How
Can
are you?
Can you hear me?
I can. It sounds really good.
I am fine. This is my first time on a podcast, and I'm really happy to be here talking about this important subject.
Yeah, I'm really glad to have you on. It seems like, some people come into the groups and they just need to talk or they just need to vent. And then other people come in and they really want to make some change. And so with you, I could see that was the way. And so if you want to just give us the background, as vague as you want, for your own privacy, just a little bit of background about yourself and what brought you into the deprogramming group, maybe. If you could start with that.
Well, I am 51 years old. I'm not afraid to say my age. And a member of Alcoholics Anonymous since I was 21 years old. And I was a member for a long time. I saw the fellowship and things happen in the fellowship that I did not like and actually frightened me, frustrated me. And there were some other personal issues I had within the fellowship. And I have been sober for 14 years since my last drink, but 24 years in my whole lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a really, really good therapist, and I had enough, really, to tell you the truth.
Right. Right, yeah.
And so I saw your movie and I watched it, and I could identify with your movie a lot. And I reached out to you because I really related to what you were trying to say, and I personally seen a lot of the things that were in your movie happen within my groups that I was part of.
Wow.
And the fellowship is, it's not the same for me. It doesn't work for me anymore. And I hate to say this, but it's like I stopped believing in it.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you stop believing in something, then it's time for you to really look at, what your beliefs are. And but I do think that there's changes that they can make within AA to make it safer for people.
Mhm. Yeah,
it's,
totally.
It's not. Mm-hmm. I came in at 1988 was my first meeting out in Wayne County,
mm-hmm.
Michigan, and you know, back then, when you got in trouble, they sent you to alcohol awareness classes. You did some community service, maybe some jail time.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw the change probably, I would say, around 2000, between 2000 and 2005.
Uh-huh.
It seemed like at least, say that there is a group of 35 people, I would say one-third were court-ordered to be there.
Yeah, that's a lot.
And that's a big change.
Right, right.
I don't want to over-talk you because I can talk a lot about this subject. I just got off the phone with a person from Lansing. And I know people that are very involved in AA and the area that I live in, and I know the people that are involved regionally and the district people. I personally was the treasurer of my group for 8 years, so
yeah.
Maybe that's the reason why I know these people, but I've also been around for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I made some phone calls because I know I'm not the only one that was concerned about this subject.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked to a gentleman in Lansing, and he was very concerned. He made a report of he said it was about a year study of AA in the court system,
mm-hmm.
and what they are doing in Michigan and how it's affecting the groups.
Mm-hmm.
He said that the report was over 100 pages long, and
mm-hmm.
he sent it into New York.
Mm-hmm.
And New York actually made a subcommittee of people
mm-hmm.
to look at this report, and they're supposed to be getting back with him around July.
Okay,
so
I won't hold my breath,
that's
but no,
that, I mean, that's the things that he pointed out, which I saw, is that, you know, the fellowship, and you have to, when I say ours, even though I left AA, you know, it hasn't been that long. So my language still can be sounding like, you know, I am still in the program.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, you're new. How long has it been? It's been a month or 2 months or a year?
It's been about 5 weeks. for me.
Oh, my God. Yeah, so it is really soon. Yeah, 5 weeks. So it is very, very recent, but I do think that it's very important, people who are in some of the groups who don't want me to bother, you know, or any of us to bother, to make it safe. They want it to just implode. And I said, well, you know, regardless of whether what I feel about it, I think it has to be made safe, and people need to be warned until the world decides whether they still want this thing or not, or will they will move on to smart recovery, harm reduction, and the use of medically assisted treatment and trained therapists who are now, many of them, a whole generation has been trained in addiction treatment, you know, that are one-on-one. It's not like, oh, I'm an AA member, and so now I've got my degree, and I'm going to come and charge you for a session, but we're just going to really do AA. I mean, there is a whole generation in their 30s that have studied and it can provide this, as well as a medically assisted detox from even just alcohol. So besides the fact of whether or not AA will remain or not, while it's still here, I'm with you, that I want the court ordering to stop for multiple reasons. One is that it has changed the dynamic and ruined the atmosphere in meetings for the people who still want to go that are decent, good people. Number two, they're sending dangerous people, violent offenders that are getting out, going to AA instead of going to jail when they have domestic violence cases. And if we were to bring on the shooting incidences that have happened, half of them, I was here listening to a study, are related to domestic violence charges. Now, I don't know why judges want to let these guys out instead of have them serve time, right, when someone does a domestic violence charge, but that's half. And I know for a fact all of them are sent to Alcoholics Anonymous. They are all sent there. Now, I used to think that, okay, some of them were, but like 9 years later in my investigations, it's like really sickening how many that's the path they choose. And then, you know, the other part is the part that's probably really new to you, and you can tell me if it is or not, but it is something that I'm very passionate about stopping, is the pilots, nurses, and doctors. Because these professionals have been sent to AA since the 70s against their will, or some of them, okay, they do it and they don't mind, but they're sent against their will, and not only do they have to go, but they are made to believe in the beliefs and the ideology of Alcoholics Anonymous, or you will not fly, you will not be a nurse, and you will not practice medicine. That is a crime, actually. It's called extortion. The coercion is what happens when you get the DUI and it's like, oh, we'll just pick a meeting. And they make it sound like it's a benign thing. Well, what if you're a Muslim? Or what if you're an atheist or a Buddhist? And then you go to a meeting, and I know, you know, my friends, my son's kid, I mean, my children's friends in West L.A. say, you know, a lot of people got DUIs here. And they were shocked to find out. They thought it was a government agency. Why wouldn't they think it? They said to me, I was sent there by the courts. Now, I want you to talk about the very interesting thing that you and this man are talking about, how the courts, this kind of conflicts with AA's traditions. We want to talk about that and the politics.
Okay, so there was so much that we talked about, and we could both I really identify with what we were talking about because we had been in AA for so long.
Right.
If you go back to our traditions of AA, and the reason why they made these traditions is so people could work together as a group, and outside influences would not go into the AA structure. They did not want any kind of organized religion or politic or organization to be involved, because then they thought it would muddle up what they were trying to do.
Right.
And so they made these traditions. And the simple fact of that, they are going against what the traditions are. You know, we're not supposed to be in the traditions. There is one tradition, and I'm a little nervous. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. You're just talking about the one you're supposed to have a desire to stop drinking, right? Is that the one you're referring to? Yes.
Well, the only requirement for AA membership is the desire to stop drinking. That's the third tradition. Mm-hmm. And the 10th tradition is AA Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name, never be drawn into controversy. That's unfortunately what they use to not comment about what the courts are doing. But the other tradition that is breaking is they are not supposed to have any AA ought not to endorse, finance, or lend the AA name.
Yeah.
Or
which happens with a lot of rehabs. Right, that's happening
yeah.
already with a lot of rehabs. Mm-hmm. And it's not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, which is the preamble that's read at every meeting, like it's gospel.
Exactly.
Which it's not. And so you have a lot of AA members, like myself, a decent, good person, who is really brainwashed into, when you heard that, because when you hear something over and over again, you believe it's the truth, that we didn't actually know what was going on outside. So say, oh, I knew a lot of women. I mean, I had 36 years when I left. And there were a lot of women with over 20, 25 years in that group who actually only went to that one meeting a week. One meeting, insulated, nice group of 40 ladies, you know, talking about what was going on that week. And, you know, if somebody came in and started hammering those steps too much, we were like, yeah, well, let's talk about reality. Like, it was not a hardcore group. So it was, which is what made it sane for me until maybe the last year. But the point is that the stuff that's read in the preamble, and it was really weird how when you started talking about this with this AA man who made a report about the courts, about how it's in a violation, that it's political to be involved with the courts. And
yes,
they
it
are
is.
So, and they're so like, they've been like, it's almost like if you took your two hands, you know, and you just kind of made a prayer, you know, old school style, where those little hands came, fingers come down. They are just so entwined. And I want to tell you, I don't know what happened in Michigan, but here in 1990 was the year when drug court began. And that was the year my son was born. So I really pulled away from AA. And I pulled away until I went through a divorce and kind of thought, oh, let me see, you know, I'll maybe go to a meeting on the weekend or something. And I was horrified what I saw. And I had no idea about the level of court ordering and dumping of people. So from 1990, the divorce happened in 98, there's 8 years of dumping. And
mm-hmm.
1989 was the first drug court that happened in Florida. California was the second state. But it's a very big, it's bad here. So what's it like in Michigan? Do you know the year that drug court began there?
Well, I live in an area that is outside a major city.
Mm-hmm.
When I first moved here was 1987.
Yeah.
And I remember the first meeting I went out here, because I used to live in Wayne County. In Wayne County, they had a big book. And when I went to my first meeting, they gave me a book, and it was the size of like a card. And I said, oh, is this for this church, this group?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They said, no, that is Livingston County. I said, really? Now the book is probably five times the size. So we went from having a handful of meetings in the last 20 years to having 60. Now that's a big growth. There's a lot more people that moved in the county I live in now. So of course, more people, there's going to be more meetings created. I saw a change from the time that Wayne County was very, very popular in AA and NA, and I saw personally a change, like I said, around 2000. That's
mm-hmm.
what this gentleman told me, too, that he started to see a really big change where a third of the people that were coming into AA were court-ordered. And he also mentioned the 11th tradition. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion.
That's
I wanted
right.
to talk about that a little bit.
That's a good point.
Anyone that knows anything about the history of Bill and Bob, the founders of AA, I was thinking about this today. And I remember when they first got together and they found talking one alcoholic to another alcoholic help for them, and they found strength within each other, they could stay sober. Alone, they found it hard to do. But mm-hmm. together, they found strength in that. So what they did was they started to go on the streets and try to promote what they had learned within themselves. They said, hey, we can save all these people from
right.
an alcoholic life. So they started to go on the streets, and they would see people that were, you know, what they would call bums back in those days.
Right.
And they started to try to convince them that their way was the right way and they could stay sober if they did it, what they were doing. And what happened was they had no one stayed sober. They stayed sober, but no one
wow.
else did.
Right,
and
right.
so they had to look at that. They had to
wow.
look at what they
wow,
were doing.
Wow, wow,
they,
mm-hmm.
they had to look at the method that they were doing, and what they were doing is they were promoting the AA
right.
program.
Right.
They
right.
were not attracting the AA program. They were promoting it. They were saying, look, at this is what I have. You want this too. And they found out within themselves that unless a person has a desire, and that's where they got that third tradition from, a desire to stop drinking, you cannot force a person to stop drinking. I always say, someone can't make me drink, and someone can't make me not drink. It's within the person, and they have
right.
to have
now, I want
the
to
desire.
Say this. Right. I mean, so it's really, really a good point, but I wanted to say this because this is something I know now that I certainly didn't when I was an AA member, and I was the type of drinker that when I wanted to stop, I just stopped. But the point I want to make now, there are people, and this is where I think AA really faults itself now, because there are other ways to stop or alter or reduce the harm from your drinking. And that would be, so there are people who have a desire to stop, and they can't. And they can't on their own, and they don't want to go to AA. And so they can use a thing called MAT, which is medically assisted treatment, which has been used for years, whether you're going to use Librium during the day and sleep medication for the night to get you through what could kill you, and you can die from alcohol withdrawal. You could have a seizure. You can have a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
You can try doing stopping completely all at once like Amy Winehouse did, which killed her. She needed medication.
Which is very dangerous to do.
That's right, it is.
Very.
So on the point, I mean, I agree with everything you're saying, except I'm adding to what you were saying that there are people who have a desire to stop who go there and try everything desperately. And this is the thing that really made me mad about AA in the end. Once I knew about these other modalities, and we're getting off topic, but I do that, you know, a lot of times. We're just going to go for a couple minutes on this. That once I found out that there were other programs, like real programs like Smart Recovery is a very, very valid program. Using cognitive behavioral therapy. They have face-to-face meetings. They're run by a trained leader. They're set up like pods, like AA meetings. You know, you can go to them, except that they have training. Their leaders are trained. They have sexual harassment policy. They have other things. And they have like a booklet that to me makes, you know, talking about urges and how do you deal with your urges and, you know, just a lot more things that are in the big book that are from this century. Like SMART was created 25 years ago, AA 80 years ago. So there's harm reduction, there's moderation management, there's Women for Sobriety, there's Life Ring, there's SOS. And those are these groups, right, that are not as big as AA, but still that doesn't matter. If someone has a desire to stop drinking and goes to a meeting and it fails, they get beaten up. They get told they need to do this more and that more, and you, well, because you didn't do this
mm-hmm.
and you don't want it enough. And that's not true. And that's where a lot of people die. And so the point that I have, and when I went back to AA in the last year that I was going, and I went a few times and I said this, that if you really care about the still suffering alcoholic, like you say in your book, then when this is not working over and over, instead of being mean, you could educate yourself and say, you know what, there are other things out there. We're not the only place. We are not the last house on the block. There's medication. There's just like I said, the whole list of things. And there is a real, what is the word when you're in this bubble? AA people, including myself, were in a bubble that, I mean, I didn't even know they existed, and SMART had existed for 18 years when I left. 18 years. And I said somebody,
yeah.
a judge, when I was talking to a judge a couple of years ago about this, he said, well, you know, there's like AA meetings like on every corner, like McDonald's. And I said, well, guess what? A lot of us don't eat McDonald's anymore, and we don't want it. We want healthy food, fresh food. I want a green juice, or I want a really delicious cup of coffee, not that crap, or whatever. But he got it. Just because there's a lot of something, it doesn't mean it's any good.
Well, one size does not fit all.
Right.
And, you know, it just doesn't. And to think that AA is the only way that a person is going to be able to get sober is just ridiculous. I know
right.
for myself, as a person that has found a way not to drink, now, a lot of people would say, well, was it because you went to AA? And I'd say, well, wait a minute. There's a lot of things that I did other than going to AA. I've always believed in therapy,
mm-hmm.
personally.
I've
been to therapy
mm-hmm.
for my family issues for years, and I still go to therapy today. There
mm-hmm.
were things that I had to look at that had nothing to do with Alcoholics Anonymous or even the 12 Steps that I had to bring to a professional. I had to have a professional be able to look at, I really had more than just one professional. I had a doctor for
mm-hmm.
a therapy doctor for my family issues. And then I also had a doctor I worked with for my depression.
Mm-hmm.
Now, neither one of those doctors were from AA, went to AA. We didn't talk about AA. It had
mm-hmm.
nothing to do with AA. So what worked for me was I had to treat everything individually, but at the same time. So I had to treat my depression along
yeah.
with my alcoholism. I had to treat my family issues along with my depression. If I tried to put everything in just that AA box, it wouldn't have worked for me. I couldn't understand why I just, you know, and I would get beat up too, like, oh, maybe I wasn't sponsoring enough people, or maybe I didn't do this or do that, and you know, maybe I didn't give my whole life to AA, and you know, because
mm-hmm,
I wanted
mm-hmm.
family time. So
yeah.
I was beat up in different ways too, and what I had to do is I had to really think about, you know, I am not like the person sitting next to me. I have different issues than they do. And one size doesn't fit all. And
right.
so when I realized in my 30s that I did have depression,
mm-hmm.
I sought out help for my depression. And it
That's
wasn't
good.
Through someone sitting next to me in an AA meeting. It
right.
was through
right.
a psychiatrist.
Yeah, good
and
for you.
I was on medication, which AA frowns upon, but I haven't been on medication for over a decade, and I have not had depression since 2002. So, you know,
that's great.
Says a lot.
Yeah, that's right.
That says a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that sometimes, and I, you know, that they frown upon, some members frown upon seeking help like that. But in the literature that they give to us to read, they say that doctors and psychiatrists have helped the alcoholic. So, you know, I do believe that there is more than one way to find a way to stop drinking. And then I also believe that there's people that are sent there that, you know, I can't tell if a person is an alcoholic or isn't an alcoholic. That is something that they have to find within themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But I know there's certain signs of it, you know. And I've met people that were sent into AA that happened to have 3 glasses of wine with their family at dinner driving home, and
right.
they got pulled over for speeding, and they didn't pass that breathalyzer. And because they were upstanding citizens and wanted to do everything the court said to do, they came into AA because that's what the court told them to do.
Uh-huh.
And so I've met people like that too. And I've also met people that frankly scared me. And I've known people that personally there was someone in our county that got murdered and put in a swamp. And
really?
From a violent offender. It happened back in 2008. And she was about 40 years old. I didn't know this lady for very long because she was new. He wasn't new. And he got put in jail the rest of his life for it. So there's scary situations that even in my little town, and I can't imagine, you know, not that Los Angeles is a scary town, but you have a lot more meetings, a lot more population out there. So I'm sure that you have a lot more incidences than we do out here. But even out here, to know that happened not too long ago, and you just never know who you're sitting by.
Yeah, that's really scary. So I was just putting together like a packet of, you know, horror stories, I call them, right? And these are ones that, these are newspapers all across the country that have stories of either sexual, where there was rape. So I'm dividing them up in rape stories. And then there's the murders, all right, and the court orders. Mm-hmm. And then the reporters have all vetted that 99% of the stories that I have that I'm putting in this packet are have Alcoholics Anonymous in the storyline. So they've vetted that. Now, I know for a fact, like there's a couple of stories where they call it substance abuse classes or they'll frame it another way, but they're 99% they're talking about AA meetings or they call them AA classes. And we're like, there's no such thing as an AA class, you know? I mean, unless you're in rehab, right? But that's so sad about that woman that you just talked about. And, yeah, there are, I think in L.A., like, you know, we had a couple of stories in the last couple of years coming out of Santa Clarita where Carla Broaddus' story was from. And they were young men who they were in supposed recovery going to AA, and he raped and murdered his infant. There's two stories like this, like out here.
Well, that story
like
is
so disgusting, like so I can't even imagine being in that courtroom that day. Like and I watched the video of the mother of the son, and she just looked like a grotesque AA woman. Like she just looked like one of those stepper mothers, I call them. You know, there's some really nasty people in AA, and there's some really nice people. But there's some really nasty, like, they're like, to me, they were people I was not friends with. They were those strange people that probably need to be on medication, that they are either serious, borderline, or bipolar, mentally ill people that are untreated, sitting in there with a lot of time, and think that because they have a lot of time, that whole time thing, you know, I have time, so I know more. But you were going to say something.
And, well, you know, it reminded me, that story reminded me of the Carla Broaddus story a lot. When I watched your movie, it reminded me. And the reason why it reminded me is because she was very new. She hadn't been around AA before. And he wasn't. He was in and out, in and out, in and out. And,
right.
You know, he thought, wow, you know, sometimes, you know, there's a lot of people that go into the meetings not just looking for a way to stay sober. Some people are looking for someone to hook up with. They're looking for someone to influence so they can get money from them.
Yes.
You know, I had a friend of mine, and he passed away from Parkinson's. His name was Craig, and I was very close to him and his wife. And he was from up north, and he came here, and he went to treatment here, and then he was in aftercare. And then I met him at meetings, and you know, they always say you especially when you're in a house like a halfway house, a sobriety
mm-hmm.
house,
mm-hmm.
they force you to get a sponsor without even knowing your sponsor. I mean, without feeling out and knowing who the person is, you have to get a sponsor within a certain amount of time. So he told he had to have a sponsor within a week. So he got a sponsor.
Oh, my God.
And he got a sponsor, and he called me up, and, you know, he had relapsed, and when he relapsed, his sponsor convinced him to write him a check for $5,000.
Oh, my God.
And I said, well, Craig, you know, did you say something? Because the next day, the only reason why he even realized he did it was because the next day he looked at his checkbook and there was a check for $5,000 made out to his sponsor. And his sponsor said, well, it's your fault for drinking. Because
if you weren't
drinking, you wouldn't have wrote me that check.
Well.
So I didn't know what to say to him other than go to your bank and stop payment on that check and don't let – and he had such shame about using again that he didn't even want to stop that check because of his own shame of using again. And I said, to be put in that situation where you don't even know what you're doing and you're writing a check in a blackout, you know, you should not have shame about that. I mean, I know that you have remorse for drinking again, but that does not mean someone gets to extort money from you.
Did he ever, like, you know, tell the group and go to the police about him?
No,
what that guy was doing? Was that his game? Because we know there are guys like that in the Hollywood men stag meeting.
No, you know, I tried to convince him to go to the house leader, they called it, you know, the person that leads the house that he was at to tell what happened. But he, because of his own shame and his own guilt of drinking, he just wouldn't do it. And so what happened was that trust was broke.
Right.
And once you have that trust broke, I don't know if you can really look at people of reaching out. I know that he never got a sponsor ever again. And Craig died from Parkinson's disease.
Oh,
he did not
sad.
Die from alcoholism. He died from Parkinson's disease. But I was his friend. I still talk to his wife, Lucy. We still send Christmas cards to each other. She came down here to visit my husband and my daughter when she was in the area. And, you know, he trusted me. And I was glad that he trusted me because I did not want anything from him other than to see him be happy in his life. And I can't say that other members are like that. Now, you know, I'm not trying to scare people, but you have to realize that, you know, AA is not a hotbed of mental health all the time. They're just not. There's a lot of things that go on that people, because of their own shame or guilt or even feeling like they did something, because the program kind of tells you to look at your side of whatever it is.
Yeah, it's always you. What's your part in it?
It's always you. It's something that you must have done to put yourself in that situation, and they really pound that into you. So if a woman, for instance, has a cup of coffee with a guy and he takes advantage of her, then they turn that around and they make it seem like, well, you had the cup of coffee with the guy. Must have been your fault.
It reminds me
of when they would say, like, a woman would get raped. It must have been the way she was dressing.
Right.
What that mentality reminds me of, Monica.
It's 1950s. It's Mad Men era, 50s, 60s. You know, I'm sure it went on later, but it was not as politically, like, that kind of, the AA is still filled with a lot of victim blaming, like I said, the women's meeting that I went to, there was no victim blaming there. There were some young women, though, who gave some very bad advice to the young girl who, Callie, who began to do all the Make AA Safer work with me. She was 20, early 20s. She had a sponsor who was 30, who totally victim blamed her. And when she came to our group, we were like, you know, he's a motherfucking 13-stepper, and he's the asshole, and you're a victim. And my husband and I were there to help with her when he came back for his stuff. We were, like, sitting on her bed in her little studio. It was a great experience. She had put all his stuff in a bag and threw it out and had another bag in her room, and Kevin and I went over there just to support her, and we just sat you know, there in her studio while she slammed the door in his face. And but, you know, a lot of this predation, it is combination money and sex. Like, they might get in there, certain type of guys, like this kid had, and the guy, he wasn't a kid, a 30-year-old or something, or late 20s, he had 9 years and no job. And she had two jobs. So it was sex to get in the door, and then you pay for me now. You pay, like,
you,
my
yeah,
way.
You exploit them for what they have financially. And this is something that me and that gentleman from Lansing talked about. So when you have people that are coming in court-ordered, what you have is you have someone that might not have the desire to stop drinking. They might be coming in with a lot of animosity.
Mm-hmm.
It changes the atmosphere. And then for the people that really want to be there, they really want to embrace the 12 steps. They think it works for them, and they want to help the other new people coming in the door. And what happens is it sets up almost like, well, it sets up fear and frustration, but it also sets up like, I don't even know if I should be working with this newcomer, because they don't want to be here. They do not want to be here. They are forced to be here. And I hate to say this, but, you know, it's kind of like AA made their own bed. They should have stood up for what they believed in. The reason why they made these traditions in the first place, Monica, was so all this other stuff would not get involved, that they would help other alcoholics. They wouldn't have any other kind of political or community get involved in what they were trying to do. So people do not, they don't like the atmosphere of it. They're scared of it. They see it changing around them. And
right.
So what you see is you see longtime members like myself see what's going on and they're frustrated. They don't think they can change it. They are afraid of even trying to even change the situation because AA is not looking at it like they should. And they're just walking away. And I think that's the reason why this gentleman did this study. So he can point out that they're losing longtime members. And pretty soon, it's what, you're just going to have it be like court-ordered AA? Is that what it's going to be? Because if you have a third right now that are court-ordered and they are forced to go there when they don't want to be there, and that you don't even know if they want to stop drinking or whatever, then you have the other people that do want to be there just want to get up and leave.
Yeah,
and
there's
so
a group of,
they have to look at this.
Yeah, I would love to talk to him. See if he'll talk to me. I just called a couple of weeks ago, I told you off the air, about talking about the court ordering again. And I am talking to a nurse that's up in also Michigan. And she said there's a group of nurses that are suing for being forced the way that they are forced, which is much more punitively, like I was explaining, than just someone who got a DUI. Or if someone says, you know, you better go, Harry, or I'm going to leave you or something. You know, they are, it's very, very strange once you really get into that. But I, you know, one of the other things, too, that I think, I mean, you really covered a lot of really good stuff, is that I think that when you're in AA the way, and I can tell by the way you are, that you're a good person and sort of a very genuine person, and then so is this other guy who's done the study, and I myself with these other women, that there's this sort of, it's a one way of looking at AA as these meetings, and there's really no one in charge, and oh, how did this happen? But when I did the research for the movie, when I looked at how very, very pointedly Marty Mann, you know, promoted Alcoholics Anonymous and wanted it to be the end-all to fix-all, it was not a, let's say it didn't start with drug court in 1989. You know, it started with her coming to Hollywood and placing AA in movies to promote it in a way that was kind of sneaky, but very, very blatant, you know, propaganda. And that they were in, you know, the first prison in 1940-something, AA meetings, and that judges sat, you know, judges were heavy drinkers, lawyers, they were very stressed out, they drank a lot, doctors drank a lot, and that many of them joined AA, and everybody was like, oh, I mean, look, I was evangelical type of AA member. Oh, everybody should join, this is great, you know, look at this, these steps are for, you know, the, what's that stupid phrase, and I think it's a, you know, a design for living, really? A design. I mean, I'd rather go be a Catholic, you know, where people will, you go in the door and as many bad things have happened with the Catholic Church, I'd rather go to a place where nobody's slobbering all over me, wants to hug me, needs my phone number. You could go sit in the church and walk out. Walk in and walk out, and you don't have, how many meetings you're going to? How many meetings you're going to? Or what are you doing? And this is the other thing that I was thinking about when you were talking of, with the way that, okay, so you have AA affected the culture, right, in America, and then you had the courts are now affecting AA. But here's the other part that has affected AA are rehabs. So I really started to see the effect of people not coming in directly from shaking at home. They all had been gone through rehabs. They were made to go to 90 and 9. Like that whole 90 and 9, nobody thought that. Like Bill Wilson and those people, they went to one meeting a week in somebody's house. Like that shit is nuts.
I know.
And people have gotten really, what's the word, OCD, like the way that they work the program even. Like there were young women coming to our meetings talking about writing their a second, first and second and third steps with their sponsors and that she was going to help. We were like, write what? What are you talking about? Write first, second. The only thing you're going to do is write a fourth. So they had changed, because of 12-step facilitation, they have changed AA, and that influence of rehab has spilled its way back into AA. And as the old-timers like me and you, because if you're there at 21, you're there 33 years. 30, right? 32 years? And that's a little, really similar to my time. Mine was like 36.
Yeah.
You had to have seen the influence, or I did, of rehab. You know, one lady came in and wanted to hire one of us. It was like her a spiritual sober coach. We were just like, what?
Well, and that also goes into their 11th tradition, where about the attraction rather than promotion. And they said that you should have personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And the reason why they said that is because when you get into all that press and the radio and the films, then you're muddling it up and you're diverting what you're really supposed to be doing. In other words, I don't know how to put this. When you want to sell a film and if AA is popular at the time and you put AA in your film, are you selling your film through AA or through the name of AA? And it just gets confusing to people. It just really does. And so I know what I know what you're trying to say when you said when all of a sudden people came out to Hollywood and started to put AA in films and all that kind of stuff. And is it
she went around
the
country and spoke at Rotary meetings. She was a Rotary Club speaker. And she met up with the head of IBM, who was a drunk. She helped him get sober. He gave her millions. And she had started the first National Institute of Alcohol and Drug Education, which then became the National Institute of Alcohol and Drug Dependence. Like, you know, now it's the NI, I think the triple D. I mean, there's three of them, right? There's NIDA. And but one of them roots are completely from Marty Mann, who used it as a front to promote AA. And I want to just give out, I did have a pilot who maybe was going to call in, so I'm going to say this now if he's listening. You can call in to 818-475-9211, 818-475-9211. Scott, if you want to call in now to talk about any kind of coercion, we're going to do another show where I'm going to especially talk about nurses, doctors, and pilots. And I don't see him calling in. We'll just give him another minute. So for all the listeners out there, I have been talking to Angela coming all the way from Michigan. And we met, like I said earlier, through Facebook, right? It wasn't through the blog. Is that how we initially met, Angela? Did you come on through directly through Facebook?
I actually saw your film, and I called you about a year ago.
Oh, my God.
When I saw your film.
Yeah.
Is the first time I we emailed each other, and then we talked
right.
to each other on the phone.
Right.
And then I was like on the border of wanting to leave, not sure if I was going to leave. I was
in between leaving and not leaving. I totally remember
And I wasn't sure. I know that I wanted, there was a lot of reasons why I wanted to leave. There was a lot of things that I seen, a lot of things that scared me.
Yes.
A lot of things that frustrated me. And
mm-hmm.
you never said to leave or not to leave. You just said, well, if you ever need to talk, I will be here. And I remember telling my one friend, he passed away last year, and he was like a mentor to me. And he knew a lot of history of AA. He
mm-hmm.
was the one person that if I ever wanted to ask anything, and it's, you know, I know that you're going to be talking about the pilots, and there's people want to say it's a spiritual program, but, you know, the roots of AA are from the Oxford group, and that was
mm-hmm.
not a spiritual group. That was a religious group.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew all about it. My friend even had a original transcript of the 12 steps. He had the original.
Yeah, it's pretty. I think it was like six. Hold on, because we have Scott here. I want to give him a minute. Okay.
Okay.
Hold on. Yeah, I'm so glad you jarred my memory because I remember talking to you. I was like, oh my God, did I forget how we met? No, but now I remember. So here we go. Let's see. Hi, Scott. Are you there?
Hello.
Hi.
I'm here.
Hey, how you doing?
I don't mean to interrupt, but continue on.
Well, no, this meet Angela, meet Scott. This is Scott, a pilot who was forced to go to Alcoholics Anonymous, forced to go to a rehab sober. He was actually alcohol-free for 14
months.
Sober. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. I mean, have you been listening to the whole show, or
I
did
have.
You just jump in? We have just
show.
A few... Yeah, so we have about 6 minutes, which is plenty of time because I know you're very direct. So why don't you just pitch in anything you want to say here about court ordering and being forced.
Well, the court ordering is just it's wrong on both sides, and you've already said that it's wrong for the government to force people to go to a religious program, and they will say, "Oh, it's a spiritual program." I've gotten that feedback from a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure what the difference is between spiritual and religious because, as Angela has said, it's based on the Oxford group. And
right.
from what I understand, they modified the whole religious aspect to a more general spiritual higher power nonsense to appease different religious groups so they could attract more people.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's correct.
Yeah, it is. They made it. There was, I guess, a specific guy who, you know, at least that's what the story goes, that was very,
mm-hmm.
was atheist. But they did, you know, try to soften it. And I do think that, you know, Bill was into some crazy stuff. You know, he was into the occult
right.
and into Ouija boards and kind of New Agey stuff. And you know, went off on it. But its basis is an evangelical religious cult. I mean, that group is very, very strange. The Oxford movement and groups in which they still exist. I mean, what's her face? A really famous actress. Her father, she was raised in it. Glenn Close. There was a huge piece in the Hollywood Reporter a couple of years ago about it, and that was really shocking that she never trusted her instincts.
I guess my problem with the whole court ordering is, regardless of your beliefs, the government has no right to tell someone how to believe. I don't care if you're Catholic or Jewish or Muslim. That's inappropriate for the government to do.
Right.
And that's exactly what they're doing. This is America, and it's a free country and freedom of religion. And if you want to go sit in the basement church and be part of AA, well, that's your business. With all its faults.
I know. I think that one of the things that Angela and this guy who just sent the report to New York is so good is that he's really sort of circled the word political in the preamble and said, like, this interesting thing that every time, like, when you try to, like, connect the dots and you feel like you're going crazy because you know that they're right there in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, for me, it was a little bit about how people got brainwashed so quickly. Well, okay, so we figured that out. But this one, that I knew that it was somewhere in the language, different things. And so, but when Angela said it on the phone to me, was it yesterday when we were talking about that, he said, it's political. They have aligned them to be in the courts is totally political. It's a violation of all their tenets. It's a violation of their traditions and tenets. And it's a violation of the First Amendment rights, that this is outrageous. And that if we, those of us who are ex-steppers, and as well as people who were never AA members like yourself, really considered yourself one and were forced there, there's millions of us. There's actually many AA members who want it stopped.
That it's
one thing that we can all agree on, that we want it stopped.
I think
it's important. You know what I mean, Angela and Scott? I think it's important.
There's different facets to this. It's not just that they're violating people's right to believe what they want to believe, but they're also being political, and they're going against their own traditions. And that is the reason why people that – what I can say is that there are people that really love the AA program, and they see what the courts are doing, and what they see is it is ruining it, what they love about AA.
I can understand that. So
it's kind of like bringing in a whole nother facet to it that wasn't supposed to be brought in to begin with. And I'll go back to the very beginning of the story of Bill and Bob. When they try to promote their beliefs on other alcoholics, it never worked. And they realized that back in the 30s. So why, if it didn't work then, would they ever think that it would work now? It's not going to work.
Well,
and
I think because Bob
that
died.
Love,
But I think that because Bob died, he was much older. And that when Bill started to take LSD in the 50s to cure his depression, I mean, if he were alive today, that guy would be on antidepressants. At least he would have tried them. And so we have 90 seconds left. So very quickly, he kind of went off on a real serious tangent. And that's why they created the General Service Board, because they didn't want the world to find out that their fearless leader was taking what was considered to be a Schedule I drug, now made illegal by President Nixon, and that it was the hippie drug that this AA leader, and AA wasn't doing so well then. It was not growing at all in the late 50s and in the 60s. It was the 70s where it had a big rush. So my point is that it was the people who came in after, Angela, the people who became obsessed with it, they're thinking this is the answer to everything. Like, who's that guy? Newt Gingrich, got on the TV and said, that the Big Book, saved. It was a great book for anybody that helped him with something other than alcohol. I don't know what that was. But really? Like, send anybody there. Like, I think, Scott, go ahead.
It's transformed from a fellowship, which is great. Get together, talk about your problems. If I have cancer and I meet with other cancer patients, and we can talk about it, that's great support. But it's transitioned from a fellowship to a program. And they're forcing mm-hmm. programs onto people that don't want to be part of a program.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
It does.
Yes,
well, I want to thank you
sense.
Both. Thanks for calling in, Scott. We're out of
okay.
time. Thank you so much,
thank
Angela,
you,
for joining. You're welcome so much. And again, I'm Monica Richardson. This is Blog Talk Radio, Safe Recovery. And we're going to see you again really soon on another show. Thank you so much, everybody.
Okay. Thank you.
Good night, Angela. Good night,
Scott.
Okay. Good night.
Good night.